All right, it is Film Study with Ken McCusick. Finally, we have real football to talk about. We all watched Sunday night as the Ravens looked really good over the Bengals 20-0 with their first victory to go 1-0. We're going to talk about that today, but let's get started first with Ken. Ken, how are you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I spent last week out on the West Coast out in San Diego, so I'm still kind of adjusting to life back. Yeah, busy work week out west.
That weather doesn't change out west, right?
No.
I can't get Maureen to get off Irma here.
You know, there's all those people who got upset a few years ago when Adam Jones said the best thing about Baltimore is BWI to head back to San Diego. And I can't fault him. San Diego seemed pretty perfect as far as the weather goes.
There you go.
So, all right, Ken. So, we've been talking for weeks. We've all been leading up to this first game. You've hinted at the fact that the defense looks pretty good during the preseason. Clearly, the Ravens' defense looked good yesterday. I think it surprised a lot of people who thought that was just the preseason games we were seeing.
Well, you know, it's sometimes difficult to tell how good your team is from the preseason. They're playing players of various varieties and various levels of talent, and the Ravens really dominated because they had very deep depth on the defensive line and outside linebacker in particular, where they were outclassing every other team in the second half by a lot. But I'm happy to say the outclassing continued in week one against the Bengals.
Right, and I mean, why not start that way with your first shutout since 2009, I believe?
That's right. They shut out the Browns in 2009. They've shut out the Bengals now more than any other team four times. Okay. At one point in Ravens history, they shut out the Bengals three consecutive years at home by a combined score of 75-0. So they do have the Bengals history a little bit.
Right, a little bit. But this was also, I mean, it's an interdivision game. It's an away game. So it made the victory even better. Not to mention week one and something to start off on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every road win is huge in this league. Every divisional win is huge, and they got one of each.
All right. So we break down these conversations because there's so much to talk about from each game. We break it down into two podcasts. So today we're going to break down the defense, and in a couple of days we will break down the offense. So if you're wondering why we're not talking about Joe Flacco today, it's because today is going to be the defensive conversation.
So this is the easy conversation to have, isn't it, Josh? It's going to be a little bit tougher on Wednesday.
Yeah. On Wednesday, you're going to hear me saying a lot of stuff like, well, that was Joe's first week back, and we'll see. It's something to build on. I didn't expect much. But today, you're going to hear, the defense played well enough. Who cares about Joe and the offense? So let's get started. Let's break down. Let's talk about the defensive line.
All right, well, great day for the defensive line, obviously. They really won a lot of one-on-one matchups, which is what you want from your defense. We talked a lot of, maybe put this in the perspective a Ravens fan can understand, we talked a lot about this offseason, how Jeremy Zuda wasn't standing up well against AFC North centers, and it looked like the Bengals were playing with three Jeremy Zudas on the inside and two O'Neal Cousins on the outside to keep it away from any current players. And really did not have much of an offensive line. Their guys could not anchor against the Ravens' behemoths. And Pierce and Williams had field days on the inside. Urban had a big game. Big games from the outside linebacker crew as well, in particular Terrell Suggs with all of them.
Yeah, and with only five guys active, right?
Yeah, on the defensive line, yeah. They only dressed five.
Is that so common?
I would say it's low, and I thought going to this game was actually a little risky that they would only have five. But the Ravens did, in fact, get away with only five defensive linemen taking every single snap of last season. So five for one game, I'm okay with.
Okay.
The one thing that's a little strange is that Patrick Ricard, who is a fullback more than he's a defensive lineman, was one of their active defensive linemen. But as it turned out, the two guys basically went virtually unused. The Ravens concentrated their snaps into three players, Urban, Williams, and Pierce, who got almost all the snaps, and then you had a smattering of snaps from Carl Davis and a few snaps also, one snap from Patrick Ricard.
And is that because they line up nickel most of the time?
Yeah, well, you're hitting exactly. When they go in the nickel, they only use two defensive linemen because you have five defensive backs. You have four linebackers, that's nine, and then you have two defensive linemen. So when I talk about having 2.16 defensive linemen per play, and that's what they averaged last year for the whole year, they always saw average that in this game. It's because they're playing a lot of nickel. And they actually played some dime as well in this game, but the dime actually takes a linebacker out and not a defensive lineman.
Oh, okay. All right. You mentioned when we talked about the defensive line last week, specifically looking at this Bengals game, you mentioned that they got to put pressure on Dalton, that he's a short quarterback, so if you put some pressure on him, he gets lost back there.
Yeah, and oh boy, did they do that. So they got pressure right in Dalton's face, which is the most uncomfortable thing about it. I mean, Pearson Williams just pushed the pocket like nobody's business. Urban got good pressure and got his hand up, and he's obviously a very tall man. They got great pressure on the edges. They beat the tackles outside and inside, and that's a place where Cincinnati traditionally has been very strong, but this year they've got two new offensive tackles, and they did not look good. They were beaten regularly by all four of the Ravens' outside linebackers. So just a great day rushing the passer. To give you a little bit of background on this, Dalton in the first half dropped back 16 times. He had only two ample time and space opportunities. You know, we talk about that every week with the Ravens'
yes.
offensive line, but that's only 13% ample time and space. During that first half, they had three interceptions, of course. One of those was tipped at the line of scrimmage. One was tipped by a linebacker in level two, and the other one was not tipped, but still we'll take all the interceptions, of course. And that was the Mosley interception. And then they had two sacks, of course, and they had one other quarterback hit by Judon that came on the play where Webb had the interception, so that was great. Just constant pressure up front. Dalton was made very uncomfortable, and it was fun to watch.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you this on Wednesday when we talk about the offense, but let's get it out of the way now as well. For any new listeners, if you could explain ample time and space.
Sure thing. So ample time and space is a concept I created a few years back to kind of score offensive line play. And the quarterback is given ample time and space if he has three full seconds in the pocket and the room to step into his throw at a 120-degree arc in the direction of it centered on the receiver. So he has to have a free room to step 60 degrees either way centered on the receiver. And that's, you know, pressure in the face is the pressure that destroys ample time and space. Pressure from the side might not, but or pressure from behind sometimes will not, but the pressure in the front always ruins it.
Right, so we're going to talk about that on Wednesday in regards to the Ravens offense, but basically it means the quarterback has that much time to actually make a play rather
That's
than
right.
the defense, the offensive line didn't just collapse and just screw the quarterback out of any chance.
That's right. So sometimes it is the quarterback's fault, and I think we saw that in Cleveland yesterday. DeShone Kizer played his first game. Steelers sacked him seven times, but a lot of that was Kizer running around the pocket like crazy
right.
trying to make plays when he had time.
Right, and not trusting his line to protect him.
Well, there you go. We're getting rid of the football.
All right, well, what about the blitz? How'd that go with the Ravens?
Well, now this was a really cool thing because Pease has a lot of toys he left in the closet in this game. So in terms of the blitz, the Ravens only blitzed two players the entire game. Now, I'm defining that a specific way. A blitzer is someone who does not line up at the line of scrimmage or inside of the slot receiver. So they had Webb blitz once, and by the way, Webb, when he blitzed the one time, was in the backfield, ball got popped up, and Webb intercepted it. The other blitzer was Jimmy Smith, who came off the outside guy on the offensive left side. They did not blitz a linebacker who was off the line of scrimmage on any play. Now, Mosley did blitz, no, I'm saying it incorrectly, Mosley did rush the passer once from the line of scrimmage, and others did as well, but nobody rushed from off the line of scrimmage in the middle of the field, and that is very unusual, and the fact that he did not have to rely, the Pease did not have to rely on any sort of schematic pressure like that is all the more impressive what the Ravens were able to do to the Bengals yesterday.
So you're saying no blitz from Terrell Suggs because he was all over the place?
No, well, Suggs isn't blitzing because he lines up at the line of scrimmage.
Okay, so that doesn't count as a blitz.
He's declaring himself as
gotcha.
A pass rusher.
Okay, right. All right. So if you're a declared pass rusher, that's not a blitz. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That helps me understand that. So Pierce Williams and Urban, those guys got a lot of playing time. How'd they look?
Well, let's start off with Michael Pierce, a monster game. Did well versus the run, well versus the pass. had a nice cleanup sack that was just a trash compactor thing, where basically the pocket was compressing from all sides, and he happened to be the one who collected him up and took him down. But he had three run stuffs, which is good. You always like to have your interior guys accumulate some of the tackles on the runs, because those are going to go for very short yardage, and that's positive. Let's see. The biggest other thing I can say about Michael Pierce in this game is that last year, Pierce was Brandon Williams' sidekick for rundowns, is the way I'll describe it. 80.2% of Pierce's snaps came with Brandon Williams on the field. So yesterday, what was interesting about this is just 11 of Pierce's 36 snaps, only 31%, came with Williams on the field. Now, they didn't have a lot of guys that they were using. They only had three guys, basically, who were getting all the snaps. So them not playing together is unusual. And the reason was that Urban was on the field for a huge percentage of plays. He played 49 snaps. And he was basically being paired with either Pierce or with Williams on each play. So very impressive game from Pierce. And he looks like one of the strongest men in the NFL. When we talk about, you know, the behemoths in the AFC North, he is one of them and maybe the best right now.
All right, that's good news. I mean, if you that's what you want, right? And that's a guy I don't think we expected that out of.
I had high expectations of Pierce, but yeah, you're right. And not as great as he played yesterday. He's just absolutely wonderful. But one of his line mates played even better, and that was Brandon Williams. So he played 33 snaps in the game. 20 of those were pass rush snaps. Brandon Williams actually was asked to drop to coverage once. The Ravens did some three-man pressure. And in his 20 pass rush snaps, he had six pressures. And I heard PFF scored it for only three pressures and still gave him a 90.4 grade for the game. So this is something I'm going to try and get with PFF by and see why they don't agree with why we don't agree on the pressures exactly. But Williams had a remarkable pressure game, no matter what who you ask about the topic.
All right.
He had pressures on two of the interceptions. He had pressures on four of the first five plays. So he just took the game over basically right from the start. And a lot of people noticed that there was a long pass to the right side. It was actually, the announcers called it for Green, but it was actually Core, who was 35 yards down the right sideline, completely in the open, late in quarter two. It's actually at 5:58 of quarter two. That pass didn't go out of bounds by accident. It went out of bounds because the combination of Anthony Levine and Brandon Williams had completely compressed the pocket into Dalton's face and forced the throw wide. So very impressive, high-value pressure there by Williams.
All right. How about Urban? Did he do even better? Are we going to keep going on this trajectory up?
I don't know that we are, but Urban had a fine game. He played 49 snaps. Now, to put this in perspective, last year Urban played a total of 137 snaps for the entire season. So he's already played more than a third of that right now. And that was only 14% of the team's snaps, whereas yesterday 49 out of 80 is in the 80% range over that as a percentage of snaps. And it really looks like he's the Ravens' new Iron Man now on that defensive line. He's the guy who they will count on to regularly play many of the snaps. So it's a very interesting change. Brent Urban is in year four. He's in a contract year. He played very well in the game. He blew up some run plays. He was on the field for all five sacks and all five turnovers, which came on nine plays among the 32 pass snaps he was on. So very impressive game from him, just not quite at the level of either Williams or Pierce.
Okay. Well, I mean, hey, you're telling me all the linebackers did good, just not one did not do amazingly, but still great. Yeah, I'll take that.
It's a trifecta of really top quality players. Real briefly, Carl Davis, I have him for six snaps in there. He didn't make my notes on the defensive score sheet. Patrick Cocard is now wearing number 42, which you don't often see on the defensive line, but he does that so that he doesn't have to report eligible on the game offensively. So he played 12 snaps on offense, but he also played the last snap of the game on defense. He took down Mixon very violently for a 5-yard loss on his first NFL snap. So welcome to the NFL, Patrick Cocard, and really nice to see him make a play on defense there.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Let's move on to, the exciting part of yesterday, the linebackers.
Okay, well, the linebackers certainly had a great day as well. Let's see, where do we want to start on the linebackers here?
Well, there was only four, right?
Right. They only had four outside linebackers active for the game. That's true. And that's unusual, perhaps, because they had Tim Williams they had as a healthy scratch in this game. A lot of people thought he'd be activated and they'd use a five-man rotation.
Right. They had to put in all those tight ends.
that would be they had to put in all the extra tight ends and all the extra wide receivers for special right. teams that they may not have needed. Yeah, it's a good point. A little dig there, I guess. But Zadarius had a great game in just six snaps. He looked very good. Unfortunately, then the Ravens, after he got hurt, he had an ankle injury the Ravens have now declared is not a structural problem. At least that's Harbaugh has called today, which is very good news. So they were, after that, they only had three outside linebackers who shared the snaps there. So they had Suggs, they had Matthew Judon, and they both took the majority of those snaps. And Tyus Bowser made his NFL debut, played 15 snaps as a rookie. We can talk about that a little later.
Yeah, well, let's get to it. Let's get to sizzle. Suggs had a game where last year we kind of talked if maybe where his career's going early in the season. Now he's fully healthy, and he looked like he was 5 years younger.
You're right. I mean, I had him written off, I think, a little prematurely, given the trajectory the Ravens were on after they dropped their fourth game to go 3-4. I thought maybe there was a chance he would retire at the bye week, having had a sack on his last NFL snap and, going out on top and whatnot. But he has found the fountain of youth. Everybody's talking about either that or Benjamin Button or whatever. I don't want to fall into those cliches. He had just an outstanding game in the first game of his 15th season, and two sacks, got to the quarterback another time when he turned him around, had to make him dizzy in the process. Dalton escaped the pocket, but he got sacked by Jefferson outside the pocket, so he set up that one. Had some great plays to stop the run, to take the edge away, and of course one of the big plays, remember, is he leapt high into the passing lane to try and deflect the pass from Dalton, and Dalton, being a very short guy, plunked him directly right. in the helmet, but beamed him, basically. Ball goes high in the air. I love to watch the replay of that play, by the way, because you can see the shadow of the ball. It's going way up high. Right. You can see it coming down. And the funny thing is, if you look all over the field, and you get a pretty good picture of the 22 players on the field there, only three players had any clue where the ball was, and they were all on the Ravens. One was Carr, who was fairly far away, but he raced towards the play, and he looked like he might make the interception himself, but Webb had his head up and was right in on the play. And the other guy was Peanut, who ran in from linebacker to try and make a play on it as well. And if he had gotten there in time, I think there might have been a collision. It might have been dangerous because he threw his body around he really needed to make that play. But anyway, it came down into the hands of Lardarius Webb. He returned it 10 yards. That's the score that, of course, put the Ravens up 17-0 and all but put the game away at that point.
Yeah, that ball went up there. They all became outfielders for a few moments.
There you go.
You look, and they're all just staring up, trying to get to it. Yeah. Another guy, Bowser, my guy, made his debut, his NFL debut.
Yeah, he is your guy, isn't he? So anyway, the Bowser made two plays in the game. He made the tackle on his first NFL play, approached the play from behind. He actually rushed outside, then the play went up the middle, and as he rushed, he had a chance, I thought, to dislodge the football. Didn't take it, instead went for the tackle. So a little unfortunate, but 8 yard gain, first NFL snap, at least he got the tackle. He had a pressure later. I thought he looked very good in coverage. I was very impressed with the way he would drop from the line of scrimmage and cover. And that's always been a strength of his. So really good start. He looked like he fit in at the NFL level. Did not look like the game was too big for him.
That's good as a guy that I'm sure they'll probably slowly work him in if they can.
Yeah.
How about Judon? Did we see a step up from him now this year?
Yeah, I mean, Matthew Judon had a very impressive game. 49 snaps. He was the primary Sam for most of the game, the strong side linebacker. He had just one tackle, but he held the edge very well, and he allowed other people on the inside to make plays. The edge setters were very good for the Ravens yesterday at either stretching the play out or forcing the play back to the inside where it was contained, and Judon was right in there doing that. He knocked a pass down at the line of scrimmage. And something that we don't always talk about is when players draw holding calls. And Judon drew a holding call on Fisher that negated a 7-yard pass. But one of the things I'm hard on offensive linemen for holding calls, because they create an option value for that defense. They effectively give the defense a free play. And the same is true on defense. You want to create a free play for your defense by generating a holding call. So, you know, it takes the play away. Now, you'd rather get off that block and make the play, but if you can't, make sure that the referee sees the hold and you can get a call on that.
Yeah. All right. Now, what impressed me, and it was fun to watch, the Ravens defense when they had their backs up against the wall in the red zone, because we didn't see that in the preseason, and they really stepped up this time. C.J. Mosley was one of the guys. He had an interception in the end zone. How does he look?
So, yeah, I mean, Mosley had just a fantastic game, I thought. All over the field, he definitely understands how the play is developing behind him. So he has a good idea of, I see that receiver over there, I see what he does to the corner in terms of his first movement and whatnot, and I know where he might end up behind me. And that he reads the quarterback well. That's also the other part of that in terms of figuring out where the ball is going. And he has a very high catch radius, so we saw it on that. Several of his interceptions last year, he went up very high with one hand to tip the ball to himself, and that was impressive as well. So that was one of a high tip interception, almost like a basketball player might make. And his coverage skills are just at a very high level right now, and still contributing, of course, in the run game as well. I think he had 8 tackles in this one. And he's the one player on defense right now that I'll say the Ravens cannot lose. So they're very thin otherwise at the position.
Right. Got to make sure Mosley stays healthy. Yeah. As we continue through these linebackers, each game there just seems to be like a play that defines that guy for the day. And for Mosley, it was the interception. For Suggs, it was the ball off his face. Yeah. For Correa, it wasn't that good of a play where he got juked by Bernard's 23-yard run.
Yeah, that's right, and that's a play he really needs to make. Needs to maintain his leverage. A lot of times they'll tell a linebacker you need to look at where his waist is going, not where his legs are going, not where his eyes or head or shoulder, because you can't fake where his waist is going. But it was a bad miss. Bernard is an elusive player, but it was about 19 extra yards that he allowed on that play because he couldn't take him down there. I thought Correa did look good pursuing to the outside. He looked good stretching down the line of scrimmage, which we hadn't seen too much of him do before, but he pushed out Bernard for a short run and he tackled Hill for a loss of 2 on another play. So I think the position's still very much in flux. One of the things you look at when you see this is that they've got 2 inside linebackers right now, Correa and Peanut, who they are alternating time with. Now, if they were doing that because of situation, you know, like third down, Peanut comes in, or on first down and second down, it should be Correa, that would be one thing. But they're not doing it situationally. They're doing it rotationally, and that means they haven't decided. So each player takes a series at a time. Levine is taking the dime snaps on third down, which means both of those players are off the field. So it's really an interesting situation. I don't think it'll last in its current state as it is. And I would not be surprised if this week the Ravens go out and find a 2-down run stopper. And there's a reason for that. After week one, you have an opportunity to sign players who are veterans, and you don't guarantee their salary for the whole season. So it'd be an interesting time to go get another inside run stuffer.
All right. That makes sense. And I guess that's some of the weird NFL contract stuff that I don't understand, but makes sense. That's why you're going to see some guys signed, if not by the Ravens, by some other teams this week.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Bill Belichick often makes the point that, you know, you don't want to tell people they've made the team. You tell them they're cut, and you tell them you hope they do better and whatnot. But the people who did, quote-unquote, make the team, you don't want to talk about that too much, because they might not make it till the first game, and then they definitely might not make it to week 2 when there's veteran signings and whatnot to be considered.
Right. All right, well, let's close out the linebackers with Anwazeter.
Yeah, well, Peanut had a good game, and his signature play was a deflection that went to Carr for an interception late in quarter 1. So that really set the Ravens up, and they were already up 3-0 at the time, but that was a very big play that stalled a drive in Ravens territory. He had a couple plays where he didn't look as good. He got beaten to the edge by Mixon on a swing pass, and it just looked Patrick's trait is speed. So he's an undersized linebacker. He needs to be fast enough to stay with backs in the open field. But this was a case where Mixon just outraced him to the sideline and beat him for 15 yak on a 9-yard reception. So it's a minus. The pass was thrown 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he raced up the sideline for 15 yards after the catch.
All right. So not a again, not a bad game by our linebackers.
No, not at all. Mixed effort from Peanut, but you know, I think we don't know who the second inside linebacker, that weak side linebacker, is going to be for the rest of the season yet.
All right, well, let's keep on moving back from the line, and let's get back to the secondary where we had 8 guys active.
Yeah, 8 guys active. They all saw action, which is not too common. A lot of times you'll have a couple guys who are only in there on special teams. The superstar from the preseason, Jalen Hill, was inactive and expected to be because of a hamstring problem of some sort that they haven't completely explained to us when he'll be back, as they are wont to do. And Sheldon Price, a long corner who was not expected to be active for this game anyway, also was out. So anyway, let's go through one at a time and just talk about these guys. I'm going to talk schematically first a little bit, because the Ravens really made a big change to the P's defense yesterday that we hadn't seen in a long time. Everybody was healthy effectively to start the season, and yet they played dime 12 snaps out of 58. So that's more than 20% of the snaps, 20.7% of the snaps, and that's up from 2.7% of the snaps in P's previous 5 years as the Ravens defensive coordinator. So it's something you've heard me often talk about here, is that I really believe in the dime. I think they've had the guy to play dime for a while. Even if you don't think you have the guy to play dime, you probably have a good guy who can play dime, because there are a lot of guys who can do it. They played nickel almost all of the remaining snaps, 36 times, and they played the standard defense only 10 times the whole game. So a standard defense is when you'd see 4 defensive backs, 4 linebackers, and 3 defensive linemen. So that tells you how unoften they had 3 defensive linemen on the field. And if you're looking for which was successful, they all were. They only allowed 3.8 yards per play in total. They didn't allow more than 4.2 yards per play on any of the individual 4, 5, or 6 defensive back alignments. The dime was extremely successful. They allowed 3.7 yards per play, had 2 sacks, 2 turnovers on those 12 plays. So that was exciting. But everything the Ravens tried, everything Pease did on Sunday worked.
I mean, that's what made it so much fun. And this is where the interceptions really came from, with Jimmy Smith, Brandon Carr, and Ladarius Webb all getting picks.
Okay, so you want to talk about Jimmy Smith first?
Yeah, let's just go down that list. Let's go with Jimmy.
All right. Okay, so Jimmy Smith had a big game. He drew a face mask on Bernard that kind of went unnoticed. That was a nice play. And again, I like players who draw penalties. So Jimmy Smith, a nice long guy, is forcing Bernard out of bounds, and Bernard had his hand on his face mask. That was a good thing. He had a late interception, but what was good about Jimmy, he was close in his coverage all day. He allowed a couple of medium-length slants, one to LaFell and one to Green for 13 yards. Those were both happened to be on consecutive plays on the Bengals' one long drive. But otherwise, he was outstanding. They did something very interesting with Jimmy, and this was prior to his interception, was really at the end of the game, but they took him out for 7 plays and replaced him with Humphrey. Now, the first 2 times were complete drives, one a 3-play drive and one a 2-play drive, where they put in Marlon Humphrey. But the one other time, Humphrey went in because Smith had just covered a vertical route. So you think about it. The defensive back runs down the field 40 yards, is not normally replaced, although the wide receiver might be, and then he's tired for the next play, but the wide receiver might not be, and that's a good time, if you have the kind of depth the Ravens have this year, to put in a new defensive back. And it was good to see Pease get a little bit creative with that and replace Smith for a play and get a talented corner like Humphrey, a rookie who is fresh.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a lot of fun. Did you want to get to Humphrey now and how he did with his debut?
Sure, we can talk about them. We'll come back to Carr and Webb in a second. So Marlon Humphrey, 9 snaps in his NFL debut. Pretty freaking effective in total. The Bengals had just 3 total yards on his 9 snaps. So it doesn't get much better than that. Some of that obviously was not him. But Humphrey didn't allow a catch. stayed with his man very effectively. He didn't come up and help in the run at all, but he was very effective at staying with his man on those plays. And the point was made by Harbaugh today that we're going to see more of Humphrey, and I think it's probably the right call. You have three guys out there on the outside, and you know it's three men for two spots. Marlon Humphrey, being a first round draft pick, there's no reason why he shouldn't be in there ahead of Carr or ahead of Smith. And the fact that they're both playing well means maybe you do exactly what they did on Sunday with him, and you do a little bit of rotation, and you bring in Humphrey other times when the cornerback has just covered a vertical route. So lots of different opportunities, lots of different ways that to get Marlon Humphrey in a game.
All right, that's exciting for a young guy like that. But let's get back to Brandon Carr, who also had an interception.
Yeah, well, Brandon Carr had an interception. It's been, in the last 3 years, Brandon Carr has had one interception and 24 passes defense. So it's not like Brandon Carr never plays. He plays every single snap, effectively, and he's played almost every game. I think he's played 144 straight games or something, but he's played all 48 games and started all 48 the last 3 years, been in there basically every play. And he's only had one interception and 24 PDs. Well, anyway, in this game, after the tip by Peanut, he collected the ball out of the air. It did kind of pop right to him, but that's still nice to see the ball skills that we weren't 100% sure were there. He had another play, which is more the classic press corner play I'm used to, is that he basically got his back turned to the ball, which is often the case with press corners because they don't stay... They don't allow the receiver to stay in front of them. They kind of have to trail the receiver a lot down the sideline. And when that happened, he still got his hands in for a no-look pass defense along the sideline that was very impressive without interfering with the receiver. So that was a good play. Very impressed with how Brandon played. He did have an illegal use of hands, which gave away a first down. He did give up a couple of pass plays that were not too significant, one an 11-yard play that I can recall. But anyway, generally speaking, a very good game from Brandon Carr. Played every snap.
All right. Now, Ladarius Webb, a lot of people even question if he should be on the team.
Yeah, I mean, he was cut because his didn't fit in salary-wise with the Ravens in terms of their cap. And they brought him back, and boy, he's another player who looks years younger than he actually is right now. So playing very effectively. Wonderful ball skills, and the Ravens, based on yesterday, and I think even before that, we kind of had an inkling this was true, are going to really want to have as much as they can in terms of ball skills in the middle of the field to make sure they collect on some of those tipped balls and other opportunities that come up. And Webb was right there yesterday in the backfield to make a play on that football look great.
Yeah, I mean, for a guy who was extremely frustrating last year, it was fun to cheer for him and remember, oh yeah, this guy's supposed to be a good guy back there.
Yeah, and he was maybe a little bit out of place at safety, kind of learning to play the position, but at slot corner, he's right back at home, and I like him there.
All right. Did Weddle get hurt in the game?
Yeah, no, I saw the same thing you did, I'm sure, because you're referring to it, but on the second to last play of the game, it looked like he got cut blocked by number 89 on the Bengals. I got to remind myself of who that is.
Steve Smith.
It's a backup tight end. It's Hewitt. So Hewitt right. cut block him on the left side of the line, and he probably was being a little bit over aggressive going to a play when the Bengals obviously were just running out the clock and the play was on the other side of the field, and took this cut block, and all of a sudden he's reaching down and he's holding his leg, and I really wondered if anything was wrong. Nothing about it in the interviews today, and he ran off the field normally, so at least that's what somebody on Twitter was telling me today. So hopefully there's no serious problem there, but it's one of those things that it really makes me worry when I see stupidity on the last play of a game that's obviously won.
Right, sure. All right, let's close out this section with Tony Jefferson.
Okay, so Tony Jefferson. I do want to get to Anthony Levine as well, but Tony Jefferson
I missed him. Forgot about Levine. Let's get to him as well.
Okay, so Tony Jefferson played every snap. Very active in run defense. That was one of the nice things. We saw last year PFF graded him, I think, as a number one or number two safety in terms of run defense, and you could really see why in this game. Very effective, comes up and fills, doesn't take a lot of chances with his head and neck that I noticed. What I saw in film last year, I saw him getting really beat a lot by in some strange games by Blaine Gabbert in the pocket and primarily, but that wasn't indicative at all. Jefferson looked extremely good versus the run yesterday. He led the team in tackles with 9, and three of those were assisted run stuffs, which means they were wins in terms of the amount of yardage relative to the down and distance you need to give up. So positive from that sense. Didn't have too much in the way of visibility in pass defense. They played him on the back end exclusively. Didn't really notice him too much in bracket coverage. And the one time he did get noticed was when the coverage got lost on Core down the right sideline. And we couldn't figure out exactly whether or not Jefferson was supposed to be the deep outside or whether Carr messed it up and was supposed to cover for man on the outside. So it was one of those two, and obviously they'll get that one right, and fortunately this one didn't hurt.
Yeah, and then Levine?
Okay, so Levine, he played 14 snaps. 12 snaps is the dime, which means he's lining up next to the inside linebacker. Two more in the slot, replacing Webb. So once again, Anthony Levine, just a pocket knife of available positions he can play. He can certainly play on the back end as well, and has. He lined up in the A-gap several snaps. The biggest contribution he made in the game was when he and Brandon Williams bowled Bernard, the running back, and Bodine, the center, right back into Dalton's lap. And that was the throw where Core was open way down the right sideline. Dalton overthrew the ball out of bounds. It didn't happen by accident. It was that pressure that generated it. So that was very good to see.
All right. Again, this is an easy game to talk about because everyone did pretty well. The Ravens shut out the team, like we said at the beginning of the show, first time since 2009. I mean, it doesn't get much better than this when you're breaking down the defensive.
No, I mean, this is like a perfect game. Other than the mixed play at inside linebacker, I don't think there's anything that I'd really point to and say, boy, I wish this hadn't happened here. And you can be happy pretty much about everything.
Yeah, so to continue like we did last year when we went through each week, we would come out with some stars of the game, and we would try to limit it to three guys. Mm-hmm. This game, you probably could have picked 10, 12 guys. That would have been perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, it was that kind of game. I mean, I've got three. Do we want to go the order we did last year, the number three star?
Well, let me get my two out of the way because I only got two. Let me get those out of the way because if they're not in order one or two, but I let mark my stars of the game as Bowser and Humphrey, as rookie guys to get their feet wet, first game, and to look good out on the field was exciting. So I just made my two stars those guys to make it easy on a game where everyone could be a star.
Those are good choices. We're still leaving out some players, but I know. I like,
they're probably not even in the top 10. But I want to make it easy for week one and say, all right, rookies, you guys did okay. Here you go. Now, next time you have to earn it on your own.
All right, fair enough. So I'll start with number three for me. Number three is Brandon Williams. I could have gone higher on this. He got the PFF ball of the game. I saw 6 pressures in 20 snaps of pass rushing. He did not do much else in terms of the run game or not, but it was that effort in terms of continually getting into Dalton's face, primarily in the first half, which really set the tone for the game and made Dalton completely ineffective. And two of the interceptions were a result of his pressure, and that was just a great game out of Brandon Williams. Number two on my list, I give it to C.J. Mosley. Wonderful game in terms of controlling the passing lanes in the middle of the field. And his interception stalled the biggest drive that the Bengals had, the closest they came to scoring. Although there were several opportunities they had, that was the best chance they had in the red zone. Number one goes to the newly found youth of Terrell Suggs, who really did it all again yesterday. Stopped the run, stopped the pass, deflected a ball high in the air that went to Webb, caused a fumble that was recovered by Pierce. Shut down plays on the edge, even though he didn't get tackle credit. Ended up with 6 tackles of his own. Just a very impressive game from a very, very football-savvy player. And the other thing I'll say about Suggs, and this has really been true the whole preseason, is I like that the coaching staff is teaching these defensive linemen who have height and have the ability to pummel the offensive linemen, drive them back into the quarterback, to get their hands up. But I love the fact that I think Suggs has a hand in this as well. So I think Suggs is really helping all the players in that front five really help get their hands up and deflect some passes.
That is. That's exciting is to have that leadership on the field. Like for years we had with Ray Lewis. To see Terrell Suggs step up and do that is exciting. So, yeah, there's no way that you can't make him number one. I mean, guys like Pearson, Urban, Judon, Carr, Smith, Webb, they all had great games as well. But my number one is Andy Dalton, because he did almost as well passing the Ravens as Joe Flacco did.
Well, you got to be a contrarian. I do appreciate that. If I had a number one on the Bengals, it would be their offensive line, which just looked awful. I wouldn't fall at all on Dalton. And I'll say this: if that's the true character of the Bengals defensive line, they're in a lot worse trouble than anyone can imagine. This is a team that might win four games this year if their offensive line is really as bad. If it wasn't really the Ravens' defensive line that was good,
right,
it was
the
really
offensive line just collapsed. That's true. I did not think of the offensive line. I thought about the offensive coach, but it didn't really seem like it was a play call on issue.
Yes, no, it was not. It was a one-on-one battles lost issue at the line of scrimmage.
All right, Ken. Well, that's kind of the breakdown of the game. I think it was a lot. That's a lot of fun because the game was a 20-0 game. Let's hope that we have lots of defensive performances like that we get to talk about. Again, each week we ask you to go on up on Twitter and to send in your questions to @FilmStudyRavens. So now's the time where we get to go through the questions. So first one is by, I'm just going to try to pronounce these names. I'm probably pronouncing them wrong because, as you know, Ken, I don't do good with the names. Marcus Weick. Do you think the Ravens will be 3-0 when they face the Steelers?
I think the chance is over 50% right now, and that means I'm giving them about a 70% chance to win each of these next two games. The Browns will be a test for them. The Browns have an offensive line, which actually I think is pretty good, despite the fact they gave up 7 sacks yesterday. They went out and got Kevin Zeitler. They still have Thomas. They have a rookie Tedford on the inside that people like, and they have Joel Bitonio, who's been a star in the past. And so I think the Browns actually have some of the defensive line ability to anchor or potentially stop Williams, Pearson, Urban. And if they can do it, they'll be a test. If the Ravens can overcome that unit, if they really can put the same kind of pressure on them that the Steelers did or just get in the backfield regularly at all, I think that then we'll be able to say that the Ravens are for real. Jaguars had a big win over the Texans in week one, 29-7, killed a lot of survivor pools. But I don't really believe the Jaguars are for real. They still don't have a quarterback, and I think the Ravens will frustrate the hell out of them in week three in London.
See, the Jags, that's the game that scares me because it's in London, so there's all that travel stuff going on. And I think it would be really easy for the Ravens to look past the Jaguars because they come home to the Steelers the following week.
Yeah, that's a good point there, something that's going to have to be avoided, obviously. But you're right. And Jacksonville, in general, is more used to playing in London. They've done it several times. The Ravens never have.
I guess that's true. Might as well just move them there if they're putting them there constantly. I think the Ravens frustrate sometimes because they like to play down to the competition.
Yeah, that certainly was something that had happened with past Ravens teams, and the Jaguars included a horrible game there in 2011. We witnessed. I think it might have been a 12-7 game, but that was really ugly, and they lost 4 times to bad teams that year, we've definitely have seen it at times. I got a question here from @AirNugget, and he asked the question: do you think Humphrey will overtake Carr on the outside at any point this season? And what I'll say is, I'm not opposed to it. If it happens, it happens. I think all three of these players should get significant playing time. I don't think Jimmy Smith's job's in any jeopardy. Of course, Jimmy Smith could get hurt at any time. Carr is an iron man, but if Humphrey outplays him, there's no reason why he shouldn't be the guy on the outside. As far as do I think it will happen, I think Humphrey will find a way to work himself into very significant playing time, whether it is rotational or substitutional in the way we saw in this last game, or he actually takes Carr's spot.
Okay. I mean, that's when you bring in a rookie, the goal is that he eventually becomes the main guy there. So
there you go.
I could see that. You addressed this a little bit, but let's get to it anyway. Mitchell Spark asked to perhaps put some of the pass rush success in perspective. How bad was the Bengals' offensive line on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the fears we have, and I think part of it is we'll go ahead into week two and we'll see what the Browns do against them. The Bengals offensive line looked to be in shambles. Both tackles appear to have problems, and it was a bunch of one-on-one matchup wins for the Ravens. So, you know, Mitchell, I think the first report is that it's the Ravens defense looks exceptionally good. They were able to press advantages in athleticism and in size exceptionally well in week one, and we'll see if they can continue it for the rest of the season. But it'll be a very exciting season if they can.
Yeah. All right. Radio Gaga 21 asks, I think we are a very good left guard away from being able to run the football with ease. Reckon they'll address this before the trade window closes? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible. The Ravens have still trade chips available. Possibly a defensive lineman would be the most likely thing they have to trade. I guess they could even trade a cornerback, and they could trade an outside linebacker if Za'Darius Smith comes back healthy. So they've got options in terms of what they could go out and get. They could also sign a guy, and that's something after week one, of course, we talked about for the defense, but it's probably more likely even for the offense that they find that lineman who is maybe a bigger gamble in terms of salary, but a less gamble once you don't have to guarantee it for the full year.
All right, got a few more here for you. Do you think the Ravens, this is from Minion Hunter, do you think the Ravens are doing what the Pats did last year on D, not deploying the advanced schemes until needed, for instance, when the Pats D changed and elevated for the Ravens game last year?
Yeah, I do think that, and a great point, and a great name, Minion Hunter, by the way. That's wish I had come up with that one first. But anyway, he did not pull much out of the cupboard. I mentioned the blitz, and specifically only blitzing two guys that were not declared at the line of scrimmage at the start. Using a lot of 3- and 4-man pressures, which don't show what you can do. No zone blitzing effectively, where they drop a guy to coverage and bring somebody from the other side to try and get an overload. They did a little bit of stunting, but it really wasn't very much, 4 or 5 times the whole game. So honestly, I think there is so much left in the defensive playbook at this point, wouldn't even begin to say. They found an effective set of plays that worked against Dalton. They stuck with those, and a lot of the defensive playbook is still hidden.
Yeah, and that's what's most exciting is that it didn't pull out all the stops to beat a division rival. Alt at fault. Do you think Bam can fill the 2-down inside linebacker role, or should the team look outside to find help?
Okay, so we didn't really talk about Bam Bradley. Bam Bradley did get in for the last 2 snaps of the game, didn't make my notes in that period of time, but he played 2 snaps, that's good. His first NFL action as well. He is the right size and shape to play the position. He may not be experienced enough to do it, and I think the Ravens are going to look for more of a sure thing to find a guy who can fill that inside need. The guy I like is Gerald Hodges, who's 26 years old. Is a veteran. They would not have to guarantee his salary if they brought him in right now. He's got a proven record as a run stopper, so he's the kind of guy that I would like to have in there. They could go with someone else who's maybe even a little older, but Hodges would be a good bet as far as I'm concerned, and not terribly expensive.
All right. And then one final question from at Josh Soroka. This guy sends messages every week, and his question this week is, once the game got out of hand, in that fourth quarter, are you surprised the Ravens didn't sit Flacco?
It probably would not have been a terrible idea, but they weren't taking any chances with him. They were basically just snapping the ball and handing it off, snapping it and handing it off. He only threw 5 passes, I think, in the second half. It was some 29 out of 34 runs, I think it was. So, the Ravens had the most impressive drive I've seen them have in several years, when they drove 15 or 16 plays, might have been 16 plays with 15 runs or 15 plays with 14 runs, whichever it was. Even though it only ended up as a field goal, it was a tremendously impressive drive. And the offensive line, we'll talk about this in a little bit next game, despite some holding calls, I think moved the ball effectively. I don't honestly believe that Flacco, in terms of snapping and handing off the ball, was at a terribly much risk.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I just saw it as a... Why risk it when you're there? You're just handing off the ball. You didn't practice the entire season, preseason, because of a back injury. So I kind of thought, well, couldn't anyone just hand the ball off?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could have put Mallett in, and you know, Mallett getting a little bit of game time is not a terrible idea. If there's a risk of Flacco going down, you really want to make sure Mallett's at least played a little bit. Now he gets some snaps in practice, but it's of course always less, and it would not have been a bad thing for him to get a few snaps.
All right, Ken. Well, later this evening I am recording Section 336. Where I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about this game, but we'll mostly talk about the fact that the Orioles have fallen apart once again and struggled. So I want our listeners, you should go check out Section 336 as well. It's a fun podcast I do with my brother and brother-in-law talking Baltimore sports, but mostly really passionate, angry Orioles talk.
Yeah. Good program. I highly recommend it. The Orioles, of course, jumped into a wood chipper in Cleveland over the weekend, which is sad. Not picking up that last win against the Yankees really hurt. I'm not completely giving up yet, but I'm almost there too.
No, it's you can't give up yet, but it's time that this week, when they're in Toronto, they need to get another winning streak going. They got mm-hmm. They've got these big 10 games ahead of them where they got to win at least 7 of them to keep the hope alive.
So it's 4 in Toronto, or 4 in Toronto, and then back home.
I think it's 3 in Toronto, and then 3 in. It's 3 in Toronto, 3 in New York, and then back home with Boston.
Oh, yeah.
So those are some big series that could really either close out the year or keep them in it and really keep them in this hunt. I do not think there was a coincidence that the Orioles made the postseason ticket purchase deadline about 2 hours before the Cleveland Indians first game. I think that the Orioles did that on purpose to make sure that they got my money regardless of how this weekend went.
You will get it back, or you'll get it applied to next year's tickets.
Yeah, it'll apply to next year, which I was going to buy anyway, but you know, it's the little things.
Yes.
So Ken, I want people to go on over to Russell Street Report and read your write-ins. How else can they read you and follow you and all that?
So look for Film Study on Russell Street Report. It's easy enough to find. Or if you go at Film Study Ravens, you can find it there. Josh posts our podcasts at various places, and we'll post on Twitter in terms of where those are available.
Yeah, it's available on Russell Street Report, obviously. And then go on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Subscribe.
Subscribe specifically on iTunes. If you could go in there and click on the little rate and click 5 stars and type a little review out, that helps people check us out, and it helps people understand that this is a podcast that they should check out and listen to when they go on iTunes and search Ravens. Because like 5 or 6 come up, and it's always, which one do I want to listen to? Make sure to help us out and put a little note in there telling people, hey, this is the one you want to listen to for all of the really detailed Ravens talk.
Appreciate that, Josh.
So, all right, Ken. So we will be back Wednesday evening. We'll record. So episode will be out late Wednesday or just in time for your Thursday commute. And that's when we will break down the offense.
All right, Josh. Thanks again.
All right. I'll talk to you then.